Have you ever wanted to journey around the world? Well, now you can in just one box. To find out more, visit Globin at globein.com, home of the Artisan Box. It's the number one box that gives back. When you subscribe, you'll be treating yourself to a monthly delivery of beautiful, distinct products that support artisans and farmers living in remote communities around the world. And oh yeah, it makes a fabulous gift. So check them out. And when you do, use the code FEST10 to save $10 off the first month of any Globin subscription. This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants, and now the travel collection packed with innovative clothing made for your next adventures. Use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. Spirit of 608, episode 124. Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it FEST, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to the latest episode of the Spirit of 608 podcast. Thank you for opening up the podcast today. If you're new here, this is the show for and about women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. It's a space I call FEST, and I will tell you all day long that the combination of those things is what is going to push fashion into a better place for the world, the environment, consumers, and the workers who create and produce all of the amazing things that we are lucky enough to get to wear in our world today. If you are coming back, thank you, thank you. I am so just glad to have you here. And for all of you listening, you're the ones that make this show go. So just know that you have my endless gratitude for coming back each week and checking out what we're up to here over at the Spirit of 608. This week, we have a really cool woman coming on the show. I think it's a really timely episode. Obviously, we're sitting here in the middle of what is the most important and dynamic and crazy retail season of the year for most brands, especially for FEST brands. And so I wanted to bring somebody on the show that has a really interesting perspective on innovation in retail, and specifically pop-up retail. It's something that I continue to be fascinated by, and also I think is continuously evolving. And who better to talk to about pop-up retail and entrepreneurship than Melissa Gonzalez? She's the founder of the Lionesque Group. They're retail strategists and pop-up architects, and they've produced over 100 pop-up store experiences in cities like New York, Chicago, Austin, LA, the Hamptons, Puerto Rico. They've been all over the place. They've worked with tons of different household name brands, Sally Hansen, Brent's, you name it, but then also a lot of FEST brands, startups, companies that I've written about and admire, such as Ministry of Supply, Madison Reed, Mizzen & Main, just to name a few. And along with being an expert in retail strategy and the pop-up piece of the bigger brand building adventure, Melissa's an entrepreneur in her own right, and she came to building her own company in a pretty interesting way. And she'll tell that story when we talk later in the conversation on today's episode. So as you're in the midst of your wild and crazy retail season, I hope that this show will give you a lift and give you some food for thought. Another place you can get a lift, you know it, you know where I'm going to go with this because I love a good segue. Over at betabrand.com, our fabulous episode and show sponsor. You'll find them in person in San Francisco, online at betabrand.com, B-E-T-A-B-R-A-N-D. And when you go there, the thing that's going to put a lift in your step, their new wedges. Yeah, so you may have heard me hyping up their awesome weatherproof Western booties recently on the show a couple episodes back. I'm kind of obsessed with these things because they're kind of like a tennis shoe and a booty in the same piece of footwear. Now they have rolled out a new collection of wedges. And God, I just love a wedge. I mean, they're just, you don't even need me to go on about how great wedges are. They support your foot. They're more comfortable than heels. They give you a little lift. As somebody who's 5'2", I obviously am always kind of into that as a benefit of my footwear. But yeah, go check out these all-weather wedges. They were just successfully crowdfunded. They've got this performance leather that is waterproof, scratch resistant, and fade resistant. And then they've got a memory foam lining that absorbs shock and makes you feel like you got a spring in your step, which who doesn't want that? So these are the things catching my eye over at betabrand.com today. Every day, when something catches your eye over on their site, you can save 20% by using the code SPIRIT20 when you check out. Thanks for giving them some love. They make it possible for us to bring you this show. And they're super bullish about supporting female entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. Now onto the conversation with Melissa Gonzalez of Lioness Group. Melissa, welcome to the Spirit of 6-8 podcast.
Really, thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get to chat with you. I know that listeners are going to get a lot out of hearing from you and hearing your retail and pop-up expertise that you're going to bring to the conversation. So I was doing research before talking to you, and I was pretty astounded and just amazed. You've done a lot of stuff, and you still continue to do a lot of stuff with media and with retail and with strategy and consulting. I'm wondering how you introduce yourself to people when you first meet them, given that you have your hands in so many different things.
Retail strategist is what I kind of say. It's a little bit encompassing of a number of things. But yeah, founder of Lioness Group and now Field Test, author of The Pop-Up Paradigm, mom. So, but I guess the all-encompassing kind of is a strategist, retail strategist.
So how do you currently work with clients and brands today?
Well, it really depends. But what I do in the beginning is the first questions I ask them is really to kind of help me walk through what their target goals are. We really specialize in helping brands who have a brick and mortar store, and they come to us at different points within their own life cycle. So it's pretty common. A lot of them call us because they want to do a pop-up because that's what we're known for. But I always like to dive in first to understand, well, what are you really looking to achieve out of it? Who are you looking to target? And helping really architect what that experience is going to look like to really position them for success.
Well, so do you have an ideal kind of client, or is there a certain stage of business that you specialize in today?
I mean, our sweet spot is definitely brands that are proven concept at scale. So they have proven concept as e-commerce companies, as digital brands. They have raised their Series B or Series C round of funding. They are looking to expand, and one of their target customer acquisition channels as brick and mortar, but it's not their core expertise. So they come to us to really think through that, everything from kind of store format to best location to what the story of the space is going to be to how do they position themselves to collect data and learn from that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're probably able to get them to that place where they can have a successful brick and mortar experience without necessarily making all the mistakes along the way that you might make if you were coming to it without a lot of experience.
Yeah, I mean, there'll always be things that work better than others, but that's definitely something that we're seeing be more of a trend is that brands are looking to do longer pop-ups so that they can have those learning experiences while the pop-up doors are open and maybe make some changes, re-merchandise, iterate, so that whether it's 3 to 6 months, there's a lot more data that they're getting, and then they move forward to signing a long-term lease, whether it's in that space or maybe another location in that neighborhood, they're doing it with a much more educated point of view.
Would you say that it's sort of the norm now for a brand to do something like that before committing to a long-term lease in a retail space?
Yes, absolutely. I think the tides have turned a little bit where they have a lot more bargaining power to do so. So landlords and property owners are much more accommodating to that because we're going through a major shift of, you know, how do we rethink the value of physical? It's not dead, but it's not the same. And so there's a lot more opportunity to test and kind of date before you marry. And so it's just the prudent thing to do. That doesn't mean, you know, if a brand decides I'm going to launch in 25 locations, they're going to do 25 pop-ups first. They might do a handful first, dip their toes, learn a bit, and then kind of take the leap of opening more brick and mortars, permanent brick and mortar stores in the next year or two.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you said before about the shifting and retail is not dead, but it's
place is kind of changing. I remember, you know, 3-4 years ago when I was reporting regularly about the fashion business, so many people were saying like retail is dead, like it's all going to disappear, and sort of making these dire predictions about the future. And I think we've seen really kind of almost like the opposite of that, like more interesting stores are coming out today. What do you see happening out there in retail right now that is really interesting to you?
I think the kind of immersive experiential angle is really interesting to me, really allowing people to kind of sit in the epicenter of what that product delivers for you and the service kind of message around that, and then getting people to buy into that and start a relationship. So for example, in New York City, I thought that what Sonos launched for their store was really smart with their listening rooms. They basically look like mini houses, and it's how you would hear sound if you were in the study or if you were in the living room or if you're in your office. And just kind of when you can deliver an immersive experience and also educate, I think it adds to kind of the stickiness to a relationship, and the brands that are thinking, okay, what are we not able to deliver online? And let's think about that being our focus of physical, or what pain points do we see based on our customer journey on the back end that we can kind of answer for in a physical space? Those are the things that I think kind of position stores for success. You're using it as an opportunity to really build mind share with your customer and to really like develop a relationship. Another one in New York City, like when Samsung launched their experience store, they don't sell any products there, but for the first year or two of it being open, it really educated the market of how many things that Samsung actually makes and how innovative they are outside of kind of maybe the one or two products that you know about.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I mean, the whole concept of having a store where you don't sell anything, I mean, it's completely sort of mind-boggling. If, you know, if you would have told somebody that like 10, 15 years ago, they would have just looked at you blankly. Like, what? Can you tell us a couple of projects that you've worked on that you found to be really exciting and just you had a great time putting them together?
Yeah. I mean, we just did a pop-up for Too Faced, and it was, the whole thing was Instagrammable. So, you know, I think a lot of it depends on the market and your, you know, your target and making sure that whatever you're designing really speaks to them. But Too Faced was really fun, and the whole store was a conversation. And people try to wrap their head around what my ROI is and these four walls while store is open. But if you can really create a viral conversation, then it lasts way beyond when the store is physically open, whatever those hours are, 10 to 6, 10 to 7. So I think they were really smart in that sense. And they really made it fun and a little bit cheeky, but very on brand. And there was a bathtub that you can kind of sit in with bubbles and is for their waterproof mascara. And there was a fun swing set with a photo booth there, and they had like you could make your own music video essentially. And so there was so many ways for their consumer to basically like insert themselves into the conversation of that brand. And when you can do that well, I think it goes a long way.
So when a brand comes to you and wants to create an experience like that, are they looking to you to come up with ideas like the bathtub and the swing and all mm-hmm. of that? Or do they more frequently come to you with the ideas and are like, how do we even implement this? How does that all work?
It's a mix. We definitely get both. A lot of the times they will have an idea and they'll get our feedback, but sometimes we start from ground zero in ideation and we get to do a lot of those creative pitching. We'll do a shared creative deck together and mood board and get their opinions. And then we go into the store renderings and help source. And then there's other times that they kind of know what they want to do, and then we kind of help them just tweak it. Because there's a delicate balance also of creating an experiential environment, but still positioning it to be understood as a retail store. So that's where we usually provide a lot of kind of feedback and value.
Let's talk about how you got to the point where you're able to bring this kind of feedback and value to the brands and companies that you work with. You know, you have a really kind of cutting edge career that you seem to have carved out for yourself. And how, you know, it's not something that there's a sort of predetermined path that you can go on, from what I can tell. And where did this come from? How did you start down this road to being a retail strategist?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an experiment in the beginning, like a happy experiment. But I mean, I think for me, it was a big value to have worked on a trading desk before. Especially when I worked in Wall Street, it was still kind of the height of a lot of the tech deals coming out and a lot of volume and just a lot of information being thrown at you at the same time and figuring out very quickly what to do with it and making markets. And so there's something invaluable that I got there that I think can translate across different industries. So it happened to be that I went into doing what I'm doing now. What it did condition me for was kind of dealing with a lot of information coming at you in an unexpected way all of the time, and quickly being able to digest it and bucket it, and knowing how to kind of match buyers and sellers, and to just really be proactive and think on my feet. Being in that environment is really kind of something you can't just, you don't teach, it's not textbook. So that was really helpful for me. The first pop-up was kind of an experiment. I friends with somebody whose family owns real estate in Midtown. And at the time he said, we want to do something creative here. Do you want to partner with us? And it was just serendipitous timing, because I had left Wall Street and I had some savings and had the opportunity of time. And so I said yes. And I didn't know that was the path I was going to take back in 2009, but there was a lot about it that kind of spoke to me, and there was interest for it on the brand side. And then we officially partnered in 2010, and they invested in renovating space. And that's one of our original revolving storefront properties that still exists today. And then just, you know, I think when I was on Wall Street, I always gravitated to technology stocks and alternative energy. And so really having an affinity to what the possibilities with technology are is kind of what has continued to shape what consumers do and expect today, which inevitably have pushed the envelope for what retailers and brands need to deliver and how we need to think about space. So I think all of that just kind of fed itself to always staying interesting to me.
So did you think that you would end up doing something with retail in the future, or was that something that happened, you know, primarily because you got this opportunity and then you realized a lot of your skills were applicable and you kind of moved forward and the rest is history?
Yeah, I mean, and it just keeps evolving. But yes, it was very helpful.
So I'm always curious, like, you know, if you of, you know, say 15 years ago were to get a glimpse into what you're doing today, like, would you have been surprised, do you think? And I know you can't obviously tell me what you really think.
No, I can tell you I'm definitely surprised. I left Wall Street. I was producing independent films and I was hosting a TV show as a VJ, and I thought I was going to be a famous actress. So No, it's not at all my path. But I hated auditioning, so that wasn't going to work. But yeah, I mean, I did a web series, and the person I shot the pilot with, who is the family that owns the property in Midtown that I ended up partnering with. So it was just being open to opportunity, and ended up being kind of a happy accident, because over time I grew to understand that the reason why I like it is it allows me to kind of pull on my core strength on the business side from what I had learned from Wall Street. But on the other side, I get to tap into creative thought process and work with creative people all the time.
I always love stories like that, where the relationships that you're building along the way and things that happen kind of by chance lead to these really meaningful things in your life that you didn't even know were coming down the pipe. So that's really fascinating. As you've grown this over the past number of years, almost a decade now, how have you approached the challenge of building a business? I mean, it's not something that's easy, I think, especially when who you are creatively is involved. I often find that it makes it even harder to pull away and grow so that you can do more and build a bigger business. What do you have any thoughts on how people listening might be able to think about that as they're growing their own companies?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of like, just know that it's always going to be evolving, and you need to try to be true to the core. And I think it's really easy to be seduced and pull in a ton of directions. That said, you also have to be open and to kind of be receptive and open to messages that say naturally, like, this avenue actually is working, versus you running so hard in another direction to try to make something work that doesn't work. So I think it's a careful balance of the two, of kind of trying to stay grounded and checking yourself and making sure that the opportunities meet, kind of create a filter, right? So you know that these opportunities kind of check the box of the direction you think you want to go, but at the same time, keep yourself a little bit open to understanding, well, sometimes you might be trying to put a circle in a square and actually there's something else very naturally coming at you that makes a lot of sense. And there's just a natural kind of demand coming in, and maybe you should explore that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's so like, I mean, as you're saying that, I was just kind of like, it's so hard to know when you should be sticking to something and having it be, you know, your one thing and the essentialism stuff, versus kind of reading the writing on the wall and going, maybe I'll switch gears. And I don't know, have you had any experiences in your own business that have led you to switch gears at all?
Absolutely. When we first started doing pop-ups, it was in 2009. So we had really been working with a lot of smaller emerging brands and a lot of brands that actually didn't have an e-commerce presence. We're kind of in opposite mode right now. And so at the time, we launched an e-commerce platform to support the pop-ups. You know, they're here now, gone tomorrow. You could still shop those brands. But building e-commerce was a totally different animal. And so, you know, I had raised some money for it and we went down that path, but it was always just pouring money into it to make it work. And it was really challenging. And at the same time, I was still getting inbound requests from brands to say, can you help us do our pop-up? And I had hit an inflection point and my husband said, you know what, say yes to one of them, give them a bigger number. And if they bite, you do it. And that's what happened. So I went down that path. And by the end of that year, I had shut down the e-commerce and then decided to pursue strategy consulting right full time.
That's really fascinating. So you thought at one point that what you were growing might have been sort of an e-commerce marketplace for independent brands.
Yes.
So that must have been, I don't know, I imagine that must have been hard. That must have been a hard decision. Or I don't know, was it?
Yeah, it was an emotional decision for sure. I think when you put your heart and soul into something, you get emotionally invested in it and, you know, it can cloud your judgment a little bit and you don't want to stare at the numbers around it and you take it personal if it doesn't work. And you just have to kind of step back for a second and say, you know, to understand what works and doesn't is also a really important skill you have to have. And that's why they say fail fast and learn from and iterate it. And having done that, I think we're much better. I know I'm a much better consultant or strategist because I actually understand the challenges of e-commerce and what goes into building that business. And it makes me understand them better as clients for when they go into brick and mortar. But the decision, it was hard. And I think I had the gut check a little bit help from my husband who said, Mel, like, cry, do what you have to do, but it's like not happening.
I love that. Cry, do what you have to do, but it's not happening. That's awesome. I could see my husband saying similar things to me. So I'm getting cracked up by that. Well, so before we get to the final, you know, questions that I ask everybody on the show that I'm excited to ask you, I was hoping you could walk us through kind of a lightning round, like mini training type of thing for people who are listening, who are considering whether or not a physical retail space is for them. Do you have any questions that you think that founder should be asking herself as she's considering, say, moving from an e-commerce only model direct to consumer to experimenting with having a physical presence somewhere?
Sure. And I do this exact checklist in one of the chapters in my book, The Pop-Up Paradigm, because it's not for everybody and timing does matter. First, you have to be clear on your goals. If you're not really clear on that, you're not really ready to position yourself for possible success. And also, there's a point. I mean, there's a point in a brand where it might be too soon because maybe they don't have the internal infrastructure yet. It is a little bit of a different skill set, but also you can get pulled from running your existing e-commerce if you're fully entrenched in brick and mortar. So do you have the bandwidth for it? Do you have a clear point of view of what you're looking to achieve? It doesn't mean you have to be 100% right on it, but you need that clear point of view so you understand theoretically like what's going to be the best location for me and who's my target market and how am I going to merchandise the store. And a lot of those tie back into your goals. And I think, you know, also be ready to meet demand if it exists. So you could have a shoppable showroom, but then drop ship through your e-commerce and that's all fine. But just make sure that those logistics and that infrastructure is in place too. So the last thing you want to do is position yourself for success, but then logistically not be able to handle it.
Right. So you mean like setting up a store and all of a sudden people are responding to it with real enthusiasm and you can't fulfill those orders.
Exactly.
Well, I think it, and what I hear also you saying a little bit is like not to do it for reasons that aren't tied to your business goals, because I can imagine, I mean, I think about this a lot with media outreach, which I help brands with. And, you know, a lot of times people want things for reasons around prestige and because they make them feel legitimate in some way. I could see that happening with retail as well, like somebody wanting a physical space because of what it means to them, but not having it really come back to help the business grow. Does that ever happen?
It does, for sure. And that's why I think that gut check's really important and understand what you define as your metrics of success and ROI for the project, right? Because there's going to be the qualitative and quantitative ROI that you get from it. And there's going to be what you get while doors open. And there's how do you position yourself to see the additional benefit that comes over the next one or two quarters once you close. Because the ROI is not just tied to while doors are open. If you kind of are in a position where the sales that you make or don't make during your pop-up can make or break your business, you shouldn't do it. if you're at a point where you know that you can learn from it, you can collect information, you can make better merchandising and marketing decisions and design decisions going forward, plus you're going to make money during the pop-up, that's great. But if it's all eggs are in this basket, I don't recommend you doing a standalone pop-up store.
It sounds like you view pop-ups as like one of the strengths of them being this ability to experiment and collect information more so than a way to just sort of boost your sales during a holiday season, for example. Am I getting
Yeah,
that?
That's correct. That's correct. And it really depends on what the brand where they're at. I mean, introducing something new during holiday is a very complicated thing to do and it's a very noisy environment. So, you know, if you're very seasonal and gift oriented business, that makes a ton of sense. But it might be a harder time to maybe like learn more. Because it'll be a very transactional time period versus a month that's positioned for discovery and kind of utilizing your store as a giant focus group to give you information.
Well, before we close out and go to the final questions in the interview, do you have any tips for entrepreneurs who are looking forward at their retail strategy for the rest of this year and into 2018? Things that you would recommend that she keep in mind, take a look at, pieces of advice you would want her to have in her head as she goes forward?
Yeah, I think overnight success is never overnight. And I feel as an entrepreneur, you always feel like it's Monday and it's Friday. So try to take things in stride and make sure you take those moments to celebrate the good achievements as well as, you know, I think a lot of us remember a lot of the tough times and take a time out if you had a success and always take the time to kind of reevaluate and know that, you know, there's always going to be iterations that happen on the road to success and make sure that you're carving out the time, maybe on a quarterly or biannual basis to assess what worked, what didn't work. And those metrics can vary, whether it's like if you're a consultant, maybe it's time spent versus time charged, or if it's a product-driven business, it's going to be a different formula. But make sure you carve out the time for that so that you're making educated decisions, not emotional decisions, and it kind of helps better position you for success every time along the way.
I love it. And I have never heard somebody say the Monday and Friday thing, but that is so true. And
yes. I feel like every time I'm on the phone, I'm like, oh my God, it's Monday. Oh my God, it's Friday. So,
yeah, I mean, I had that experience today where I was like thinking about Friday and I'm like, oh my God, it's coming too soon and it's not even here yet. But I love that. And I also love to know if there are any tech tools, apps, books, or other resources that have helped you kick ass in your day-to-day life that you think would help listeners kick more ass in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, I mean, we all have Dropbox. My whole team, we all use Basecamp. You know, I think it's the things that are going to keep you organized and effective. So those are two that I use all the time. And Basecamp's a great tool to use both with your clients and with your team. And then, you know, just things that are kind of mobile friendly. So we're all on Google Sheets and Google Docs. So I would say those are the kind of the four things we all use is Google Sheets, Google Docs, Basecamp, and Dropbox on a very frequent basis.
So you and I have not hung out in person, but if we were to hang out all day, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about you and what might drive me insane?
You would love, I don't know, if we were working or not working, if you would probably, maybe you'd love my daughter and my dog. I don't know. That's kind of my life outside of work, but I
kind of dog do you have?
I have a Jack Russell Terrier.
I always have to ask because I'm a dog. I'm in between dogs and I always talk about dogs.
She's the best. She's been with me a long time. She's 13 and a half, but her and my daughter are besties and it's very sweet. My daughter is almost 2.5.
Oh, so
it's,
wow.
It's really fun to see them together. Fighting over toys and sharing toys.
So I would probably love your daughter and your dog. Anything you think would drive me crazy?
I don't know. It might be the way I kind of always, I have, and I'm working on it, very strong, like very tied to like the management of my calendar. So some people appreciate that. And some people, it drives them crazy.
So if you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it for the next 7 days, what would it be?
Stay tuned.
Ooh, I like that. That's cool. Nobody's ever said anything like that. And I love it.
Great.
That's great. I mean, not that it matters, right? You know, it's your answer now. I'm like, ooh, I like that. I would wear a shirt with that on it. What I'm saying.
Awesome.
So I always close out by asking guests if you have a question that you'd like to ask me, anything silly or serious, and I will give you an honest answer.
Serious or silly? I think I'm going to go silly. I don't know. What are you most excited about for the holidays?
Ooh. Holidays. Well, I am currently very excited that I have a family that's kind of spread out around the country right now. And so we were trying to figure out a place to go where We could all convene the week before Christmas and hang out. And so we're going to Charleston. And I'm excited about that because I love Charleston. And it's always fun just to take some time off and kick back with family and friends. And I especially love going to that particular town because they have a huge, you know, they're just really supportive of independent businesses and artists. And they have great food. And it's kind of warm. So that is what I'm excited about. And if people would like to keep up with you on up through the holidays and into next year as well, what's the best way for them to find you and connect online?
On socials, on Twitter and LinkedIn would be the best. So at Mel's Styles on Twitter and then Melissa Gonzalez on LinkedIn. I'm sure there's a lot of us, but if you go to my website, lionessgroup.com, you can find it.
Okay, awesome. We'll put all of those things in the show notes. So if you're listening and you want to find out more about Melissa, you can go there and read and click through and stay in touch with her. Melissa, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your expertise. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too. It was a pleasure working with you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Done and done. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Melissa. I certainly enjoyed learning more about what she's up to and how pop-ups are continuing to evolve in the retail space. If you're thinking about how your media outreach and brand amplification strategy needs to continue to evolve, I'd like to invite you to come over to Presto and check out what we're up to over there and get on our mailing list, because not only will you get our list of 30 daily media tasks that I recommend, things you can do in 20 minutes or less to keep your relationships with the media strong and growing, even in between those big media moments you have throughout the year, in addition to getting that list, which you'll find in the sidebar of the Presto blog at PRESSDOPE.com. In addition to that, you will also get on our mailing list and each week, about each week, not striving for perfection here, striving for getting the best information to you when we can get it to you. But about every week, we send out an email with tips and insider information that I want you to have to help your media strategy. There's often a weekly challenge to get you going. And sometimes we even give you some of the materials, free access to the materials that are typically only available to paying Presto members. So if you want to get on that list, you'll get some free content, some cool stuff to help you in your media list, like templates for pitches. I have let people in to see the email scripts that we use and a lot of other good stuff. So I invite you to come over there, check that out. Thank you as always for tuning in. And if you want to do an absolutely free thing to help the Spirit of 608 out, just a reminder that you can share, rate, review, subscribe to the show in iTunes. It really works wonders. I know it sounds like a small kind of like, what is it going to matter if I do this or not? But seriously, it makes a huge, huge difference in our ability to get more eyeballs on the show and help more female entrepreneurs keep at it and build businesses that not only help them create the lives that they want, but, you know, do good in the world. So thanks for being a part of what we're up to over here. And thanks for being a part of what you've brought into my life. I love doing the show and I couldn't do it without you. So I hope you will join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, call it fast, and it's the future.